Rob versus the FFA brings you
Phoenix City.
Welcome to Phoenix City. We're back with Sans Frosty, but Dave and Cam are with me. We're Sans Ella as well, actually, although she's been gone for a while. We just haven't recorded.
We did say goodbye to her, though.
We did. Did we?
Yeah, we did. We had one last record with her.
We snuck it in before Ella moved back up.
That's right.
To
I think I wasn't there for that.
The big smoke? Yeah, you didn't say goodbye, asshole. Yeah.
Bye, Ella. I got to congratulate her on her new job before she left. Did you guys talk about that in her final episode?
No, actually we didn't,
because we wanted to record another one with her after that, but we never managed it.
Yeah. So, Ella has moved up to Auckland to take on a role in the digital communications team for New Zealand football.
Yep.
Which is very exciting, using her powers for evil, not good, but hey, it's fine.
It's a great opportunity.
Oh, totally.
You'd jump in with two feet.
Analogy,
you'd bobsled it, wouldn't you?
Yeah. Well, and fingers crossed, you know, having good people in there might change some of the, you know, the historic baggage that various fans feel towards the organisation. I think it might be a good thing.
Jesus, that was diplomatic, mate. Well put.
Particularly the communications department. But we digress. We're here to mostly talk about the Phoenix. We'll come to New Zealand football later on. But we're here to talk about Phoenix A-League. We're just going to basically have a kind of panel for 30 minutes of just discussion about what's going on, what might happen, speculation, all sorts of things like that. Because there's not a lot of movement.
No.
In terms of kicking up a gear and starting the league again. There's not a lot of movement in terms of players being signed and like that. It's kind of just a period of wait and see, which is kind of why we haven't really recorded a podcast for the last little while.
We talked for a while there about doing a kind of season review, and I think it's fair to say none of us really had the appetite to do that. We all felt quite kind of apathetic at the end of the season and in many ways about stuff. Like it would have been nice to have done, but we also had a hell of a lot of stuff going on just, you know, outside of football.
Yeah. Life.
Yeah. It wasn't top priority, and by the time we've got to now, we're kind of like, there's no point doing a season review.
No.
Let's just talk about where things are at.
Yeah. I also think the apathy stems from the fact that when we did come back, it was quite poor.
Absolutely.
If it had been good, even if we'd got knocked out when we did, if it had been good, we'd have probably been a lot more energized by it. But
the state of the team in the last few games really sucked the kind of joy out of it a little bit. Like, I mean, I still love the Phoenix. I wanted us to do well, but it really felt like after the kind of lockdown break, we just weren't the same team, and it never quite sparked.
Yeah, and
the same way, which was really sad.
And it was also really hard just watching every game on TV.
Yep.
And while the club and other organisations did their part to make kind of a game day feel at the pub and things like that, it was never quite the same of like going to match day, having drinks at the pub beforehand, going to the game, and even if you lost 2-0 or whatever, you spent 2 hours with mates that you don't see very often.
Yeah. Mm.
And so we just didn't really have that feel at all, which I think really did add to the apathy of the whole situation, which was unfortunate. I think if we had been going down the Googler, I've had great nights out with you guys and the rest of the Fever and the rest of the supporters when we've lost 3-0. Mm. And you make the most of it. And it was just really hard, given that we're turning out to the pub, trying to like build up some excitement for the game and just to watch the way that the team went. Like, I don't blame anybody. I don't think it's anything other than just the situation that the world was in and the fact that these guys were away from families for so long, and you can't really put the blame on anybody.
That's exactly what the point was, mate. Because of where the world was, it directly impacted everything else, right? And it's like everybody's mental health has taken a massive hit. Everybody's welfare has taken a massive hit. It's hard to get energized for everything all the time.
Yeah.
Whereas, you know, it's the first two games, the first one they did at the Churchill and the one they did at Max.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Those were fantastic events. They did brilliantly well. One we played brilliantly in, one we should have won and didn't. But, you know, the atmospheres they created, from that point on after that, it just seemed to dwindle down. And I think you've actually touched on a very good point there, Patrick, because the likelihood of us having to do that for 6 months is quite high.
Yeah.
And if we're going to have the same kind of apathetic response to it, I think that's going to cause the next season to be quite a chore.
It kind of begs the question, what's the point? Like, what's the point in fielding a team? This is getting really dark really quickly.
It has, hasn't it? Yeah.
But it's like, if we're looking at a season of 6 months of players overseas, away from families, that kind of thing, what is the point of fielding a team in the 2021 season?
And that's hard as a fan, but it's got to be hard as a player as well. But going back to one of the things you were saying before, I think not only was it like the watching at the pub thing, which in and of itself can be fine, it's the fact that there was no possibility for going to a game. You know, I've watched us in playoff games before that I've considered going to, that were in Australia, and watching at the pub was really hard because I'm like, oh, I wish I was there. But you always know, you know, if you made it through those elimination finals or whatever, like 100% you were going to the final. Even if we had played really well through all of this, you still couldn't have gone. No amount of, you know, I'll spend all of my savings to go to this would have mattered. You still were going to end up watching in the pub.
Yeah.
It didn't matter how well or how badly it went. The possibility of being at the game didn't exist, which was a different feel from, you know, oh, we've got a run of 5 away games in a row, which is a bit shit, but you know it's coming back eventually.
Yeah. It was a weird situation because I fully intended to fly back from London if we made the final. Because I've been supporting this club for too long to not go to the one that we finally make.
I had the money in my account.
Yeah.
I literally had my airfares set aside to go.
And I would have done that, and that's like a massive outlay. Like, it's not quite as far as coming back to New Zealand, but it's 2 flights. It's a good 23 hours in the air, but I would have done it at a heartbeat.
Yeah.
And even though I was in this country, so much closer to the action because of the situation, it was still like completely off limits and like couldn't even just go to one game and just bang a drum and support the team. Like, and that made it really hard. That was compounded by the performances. And what it all led to is that we kind of got to the end of the season and we were done with the podcast. That last podcast that you weren't at, Dave, if the listeners can remember it, it was a while ago, but it was pretty pretty down buzz. We ended up pretty quickly. We're just like, you know what? Nobody else needs to hear this. Mm. We don't need to put this out into the world. But it was a real shame. And then we haven't really had much happen since to pick us up again.
There's nothing much public, I guess, is the problem. There's not a lot coming. We know that there's some CBA chat going on. We know there's you know, there's a lot of negotiations going on behind the scenes. But because none of that stuff comes out in public, there's very little that you can actually talk about.
Well, and I think the only public stuff only feeds into the kind of the darkness of the situation. I mean, you've had players leaving and some quite big names leaving, and that's all publicly announced.
Yeah, Stephen Taylor.
Well, Stephen Taylor's the only one that was contracted that's left. The other one that's left was Libby, but we got a transfer fee for him. So that's okay. So the only one, everybody else that's gone was off contract.
Off contract. Right. But there's still players you might have liked to have kept and suspected we probably would have had a run at if the situation had been different. But it's no surprise that the club aren't offering up new contracts in the current situation. I mean, they need some certainty around what's happening for next season before they can start offering contracts to, you know, the Callan Elliotts of the world. And, you know, it makes sense. But it's really hard to get excited when the only news you have is no news and this player's left. Mm. Like, that's tough to get excited about. And it's not, I think it's probably prudent we're not signing any players, but you do see across the ditch, you know, there are some teams still making new signings and you know, there's some positive news there. But every time I see those new player announcements, I'm like, you know, you know, MacArthur announced new players, they announced coaches, and you're like, is your team even going to exist ever? Like, are we going to have an A-League for you to play in?
What was it?
And is the A-League going to have space for this new team that got announced in a totally different situation?
And that kind of compounded itself. Because was it Melbourne City who signed 2 players who then got released 2 weeks afterwards because they, whatever, couldn't pay them all? The guys got other gigs somewhere else or whatever it was?
I think it was gigs other else. Of all the teams that can pay players, Melbourne City is the one that's paying players, so right?
It makes sense that they're signing players, but even they are signing players in a situation that nobody knows what's happening.
Well, the point is, no one knows what the salary cap is. I mean, there's speculation.
Yeah.
There is information that the clubs will have that they haven't told us. But until that is, the CBA is agreed and everything is concrete, there's no way in the world
sign them. Let's talk about that for a bit, because what the public knowledge is that the salary cap is being reduced.
Yep.
Like, the figure I've heard, and the one that is on the top of my head, which I don't know is true or not, but it's 80% of the previous. Is it lower than that?
I've heard much lower than that.
A lot less, right. Okay.
So I've seen some people do some, you know, back of the envelope maths around how much lower the TV deal is, and obviously the salary cap money is reasonably closely tied to the salary cap. And so the number I've heard is a drop to about 1.6 from you were getting close to 3.
Right.
I think it was 2.8, 2.9.
So it's more like 60% than 80%.
See, mine was, I think it was 3.4 down to 2.1. So a similar drop, but the figures being slightly different.
Still about 60%.
So I think you're talking 50 to 60% of what we were before, which is in terms of the last time we had a salary gap that, let's say it was 1.6 or even 2, is a long time ago.
It's a decade. You're talking
back before we had big name marquee players at all. Now, we on the pod and off the pod have talked about, you know, the benefits of marquee players or lack thereof a lot. But you have to say that since those kind of pre-Del Piero kind of days, we've come a long way as a league. I don't know that that's specifically down to the fact that they've been able to sign, you know, some big name players, but certainly the stature of the league and the quality of play has come along a lot. And I think going back to a salary cap that even before you consider the inflation across that period,
It's
suddenly down to you really can't afford to even sign imports is a problem. And any imports you are getting are, you know, third or fourth tier imports. You're certainly not getting big name stars for that money unless we're allowing a massive gap in the salary cap, like we still are allowing two or three marquee players and going, some clubs are going to have no one, and Melbourne City and Sydney are going to still have the Del Pieros of the world.
Yeah, but if you're Melbourne,
and run away with the league.
If you're Melbourne City and Sydney, why would you? Like, surely the philanthropy only goes so far. It makes sense when you're getting a lot of players being paid for by the salary cap to go splash the cash out there. But in the current world, in the current situation, are those players even available?
Honestly, mate, with Melbourne City, it's irrelevant. They, because of who owns them, and the amount they spend, they won't notice what they spend on Melbourne City.
Fair.
They spend larger money than they spend on this club.
On single players.
On single players who don't make their bench.
Yeah.
So okay. there's no issue there.
So, okay.
Sydney, but different though. Sydney is a different kettle of fish.
Sure. So put aside that issue of the marquee players, because I think that is just something that is a step too far to worry about at this point, because we just don't know. And just take a look at trying to form a squad with 60% of the salary cap.
I think you still have to factor in imports into that, right? Because I think no matter how this lands, you're still going to have some import slots. But I think if you ignore the marquee issue, you've got to assume the quality of imports is dropping down a long way. Because I think we've talked, you know, even this year and previous seasons about how you kind of need three at least of your imports to be really firing, because they're the ones actually making a difference in the league now. You know, your Lafondras are the people making the difference for teams winning and losing. So dropping back to a league where, you know, you've got your Totos is going to be a big shift backwards, and you're going to be relying on the local players to be the stars for the most part again.
Yeah, which isn't the worst thing in the world for
getting people through the door. If we could get people through,
well, it's good for development of players. Yeah. Is it good for fans?
I think. Just a side note, I actually think if we manage to keep Ball and Davila, which are on contract, if we don't have to renegotiate, they could be a massive fill-up in our.
You don't
season.
Keep both of them at 1.6 million, though.
Unless you can pay them outside the cap. Yeah.
Yeah. And unless you want to. But who knows what the club want to do. I would say that the club will be looking, and Wellnex will be looking, to reduce costs in any form until they can start getting people through the door. Because while ticket sales only make up a small percentage of the income for a club over the season, it's a massive hit to sponsorship dollars if nobody's watching the games.
Well, think of it this way. If you've not got your team in New Zealand, not playing in New Zealand,
you can't do.
You've got staff in the office. You've got no event staff because you're not putting on an event. You've got no community engagement because you don't have players to send out to do the community work. You still need a comms and social media team, but marketing, how you market your team is completely different because they're just not here.
Yeah.
And if you dive over into the Australia market, then you're competing with all the teams that are over there for a short-term game, because you can't then have those guys advertising again when you come back over and play in New Zealand in a year's time.
The club over there is still called the Wellington Phoenix. And like, while there is a relatively large supporter base for the Phoenix over there, it's not anywhere near as big as any individual club has for their supporter group, their supporter base. And so unless you literally rebrand as the Wollongong Phoenix or whatever and say, we're going to be your team, and that just what's the point of having
surely a new... Surely you wouldn't do that.
Surely you wouldn't do that. But that would be the only way to make actually sinking some marketing dollars into the club in Australia worthwhile.
Well, yep. it becomes an entirely different proposition, as Cam's kind of talking about. And so I don't know the full details, but I've certainly heard around the traps that the Phoenix behind the scenes have got rid of some of that back office staff because it makes sense to you. As you say, you know, you don't need an events manager when you're not going to be running events. So some of those roles you can completely get rid of, and some of the other ones, the prospect changes entirely because what you're doing as a community manager, for example, is now managing a remote community, and you need to find someone who actually is specialized in that. You know, the community stuff is no longer about sending Nixie and a couple of players out to a primary school, because you might be able to send a Nixie, but you certainly aren't going to have the players available. Yeah. So it becomes about building a remote community. And it's such a different proposition. And it doesn't mean it can't be successful. You can still sell, you know, scarves and jerseys and all of that stuff, potentially, if you can get the engagement with a team that's not going to be there, which is really hard to do. But if they can find the right people to do that and they can build the right culture around it, that stuff can still work, but it's going to be totally different. And you might see them engaging with totally different audiences. Those of us who are used to that kind of real face-to-face, you know, game day experience aren't going to like it as much. But you might actually have people who were on the fringes before feeling like they're more involved in the club because suddenly they're getting the same access to, you know, a one-on-one Zoom chat with the captain as everyone else. You know, they're no longer a fringe fan. They now feel like they're the core. And so there are ways that can work, but it's going to be different.
And the problem I see with that situation is monetizing it.
Yep.
At the moment, your fan engagement is directly linked to selling a ticket to the game. You go to a school so that those kids hopefully say to their parents, I want to go to the game. You go out to Mud and Lucky Parking Host Community Day because you want the families to come along, realize it's a great day, and actually buy a season pass for the rest of the year. And you can't do that when you're fostering remote anything. You can't. It's so difficult. You look at, like, my industry, for example, where I'm working, you're doing live streams of theater shows and things like that. You can't sell a ticket to that. Like, you can watch it and you can still have that engagement. People can have that link to you, but there's no way to make money out of it.
No, but and the cost structure changes as well.
True, totally. But when Wellnicks are looking to try and keep the club afloat and they need every single cent they can have to keep that afloat with no games happening, especially with sponsorship dollars drying up,
it's hard.
There won't
be no games happening because, see, let's assume for a moment that we are based in Australia and the smart money would say what you do is you host all your games in New South Wales, so they'll technically be home games maybe. Hosted in New South Wales, you're still going to get a crowd there. Or against all the New South Wales teams, you host them in smart places that basically make them a home game for the other team. And so you're still going to have a crowd there without you needing to market that at all. You let the opposition market the hell out of it. All you're doing is paying the stadium fees and whatever. But behind the scenes, all the marketing efforts you're doing are a hell of a lot cheaper because recording a bit of digital content to put online and feed out to your audience is actually relatively cheap compared to putting up billboards and trying to get people to a game. So the structure changes completely, but it's why you suddenly would have to have an entirely different mentality and strategy with what those staff are trying to do, because it doesn't come at all about getting bums on seats at a stadium. You just let that happen by physically putting the game in a place and letting someone else do the work.
And then, well, then that also brings up this different strategy. How do you see, you're going to need to set up an office in Australia for the period of time you're there.
Yep.
So that directly impacts the people here who have families and lives outside of what they currently do. Like, if put yourself in a situation, if you were someone working in that office and they asked you to go to Australia for 6 months, right?
But who
could
needs,
you physically
who needs
do
to
it?
Be in that office in reality?
So you'd have comms, social media, and your football group.
So yeah, I would say
I think it's mostly football ops.
And marketing.
I would say that everybody has
marketing
to be here.
Doesn't need to be based there.
Yeah.
But you can't market anything here. You need somebody doing marketing over there.
So what? What are you marketing over there?
Yeah. You need marketing dollars coming in. The only way you can get that is by having somebody over there selling advertising for the Knicks, for their games over there.
I agree to a certain extent, but I think that mostly everything else can be run from here.
Yeah.
I think having a man on the ground to sell commercial opportunities, you might do. from Australia. But the way the world is at the moment, you're equally as likely to get on a Zoom call with these people and they will understand what the situation is as you are getting in the room with them.
I think the staff you need there are pretty much entirely operational, whether that be football ops or, for example, I think there is some communications ops stuff. So, for example, if you're going to be doing a lot of video content, which I think the smart money's on, you're going to do that, you need a person with a camera who can do that.
Yeah,
but they don't need to be the person in charge of your marketing strategy. That can absolutely be here. The head of marketing and, you know, the person actually in control of that and the person, you know, talking to the sponsors and selling those deals can very much be based here.
Yeah.
But you do need an operational person there to, you know, do the shit on the ground.
I think we're all in agreement that you need some sort of base of office over there, which then you're paying two office spaces. You're paying two pieces of rent.
Well, my key thing on that, though, would be I don't think you necessarily are asking a lot of the staff from here to go. I think in terms of ops staff, so football operations, so, you know, your coaching staff and, you know, your physios and all of that, you need people who are willing to base themselves out of Australia. Now, we have a pretty strong kind of community in that football operations, like some people who've been there for a long time that, you know, you'd obviously give the first option to. But I think if your physio isn't willing to go or someone like Gilly doesn't want to make that trip, you can find ways around that, whether that be kind of splitting out the role into two parts and letting the person keep half of it or replacing them with someone who's willing to be on the ground in Australia, you know?
Which is rough, but that's the situation we're seeing with other staff here.
It's what we're asking the players.
Yeah, exactly. The players don't have a choice, really. They either go and they have a contract or
they don't
stay and they don't have a contract. And that would be the same for other staff members, unfortunately. And that's just the reality of the world at the moment,
And I think the majority of the other roles, you have to replace them anyway, sadly, because the strategy and you know, the kind of mechanics of what those roles are going to be is so different. Like I say, you know, you hired a community manager whose role is going to be, you know, around being able to physically engage with people in communities here, and suddenly you can't do that anymore. What that looks like is totally different. You know, and a membership manager, that's going to be a different prospect too. It's not about selling season tickets that let you go to a game. I'm sure you're going to want to try and keep up some sort of member culture, but what that looks like is basically digital community management, right? Like it's going to be totally different.
And so private content creation, basically. Yep. So again, the people that are over there creating that content and sending it out to the specific people who pay for that particular content.
And so it's going to be so different. And I think the reality of that is that would have required changing a lot of the personnel anyway.
Unless your current personnel have a skill set that they are able to pivot into this role.
Absolutely.
Which they will have the first right to. Like any
You'd hope that's how that's working.
Absolutely. But not necessarily. That they are essentially different job descriptions to what they sign up for. And but this all also assumes that we actually have football happening next season, which at the moment in the situation from what we know publicly, like, and I'll say without a doubt, I know nothing privately about any of the situation. I'm not skirting around anything here, but there is no guarantee that there will be football coming up this season. It's very much in the balance, depending on if there can be an agreement signed between the players and the clubs, but an agreement between FFA and the clubs.
And the clubs with each other.
Totally, yeah, because absolutely. The clubs are the ones running the league now in accordance with FFA's guidance that they passed over to the new clubs to run it. But
and I think realistically, the commercial model everyone's operating to has to change there. I think in the environment we're in, you look at how they try to manage that end of the season with basically operating in bubbles. And the league, which at the time kind of involved the FFA a lot, taking over the cost and going, we're going to pay for housing all the players, we're going to pay for the stadiums, we're going to pay for all of that, and then we'll take the money out of a pool that everyone, you know, it's basically coming out of the TV money rather than that going to the clubs, which makes a lot of sense. You know, you were centralizing the costs because no one was going to make any income, and it didn't make any sense for the few clubs, for example, Sydney, who could get some people to a game, to be the only ones allowed to make any revenue. It made a lot more sense to go, everyone shares the cost and everyone shares the revenue. You know, it's great that we can have some Sydney fans at this game, but that just goes into the kitty. It doesn't go to Sydney. You know, that made sense to operate that way. And looking at how Australia's likely to be, assuming you host it in Australia, you're probably still going to have a level of, we need to host this in hubs. And if you're doing any sort of hub model, surely pooling in the same sort of way makes a lot of sense. So even the clubs that are getting big sellout crowds, assuming we're allowed those sort of numbers, I don't know that necessarily that's those clubs getting to pocket that, because if you're basing all of the team, you know, you're basing Wellington out of Sydney, and you probably have to bring Perth over the way their border looks. They're talking about not being able to open their border to the rest of the country until April at the moment. And you have Queensland still closed. They're looking at a 1st of November opening, but then you've got new community cases in Sydney as of yesterday that might affect that. You know, you don't have any guarantee people are just going to be moving freely about Australia. So you might well be looking at, we're all in the same boat anyway, with no one making any money, everyone operating remotely, which will be bizarre. But the whole model changes, and so the clubs are going to have to agree how that works.
Yeah.
And if Sydney go, no, we want all our money, and everyone else goes, well, that doesn't make any sense, and they can't reach agreement.
No football,
you know?
Yeah. And the fact that so many things have to be ticked and everything has to be in line for even the football to start, and this is all assuming that current situation of cases and things like that continues and things don't worsen, which we've seen happen in Australia, for example, happen
and
here.
Very easily, and it could happen here again very easily. It's just one slip, isn't it?
So putting all of that aside, the fact that that is like completely out of anybody's control, it's still the case of having to have all those agreements in place and working out those details. And by the sounds of what's coming out in the media, at almost every hurdle, they're getting stuck. The current negotiations are getting stuck at certain points already. And that might just be because people are trying to strong arm other organizations by going to the media and leaking things. That might be because it's genuinely the case that this is actually really hard to get over the line because of agreements like Sydney wanting all the money from having 40,000 Sydney supporters in the stadium, things like that. So it's all so dicey. And like I personally can't see a restart of the league before the end of the year.
No.
Because the
current word was December, wasn't it? That's what's been out in the media recently.
Is it? I didn't hear that. But
I think I saw that in an article somewhere.
I've had some discussions with like some staff members, but largely off the record because they're not people who would have been across the finer details. But talk that usual kind of New Year, you know how they do the summer festival,
yeah, summer
whatever
football.
It is,
yeah.
Where they basically have games every day, and it's great when you're on holiday and you can watch a shitload of football. Targeting that kind of period to be the start there, so that's usually post Christmas, running through kind of the beginning of January.
Yeah,
trying to target something like that to kickstart the season, potentially with same stadium double headers, like that kind of stuff. Which, you know, when I was hearing it, was like, that's not the most stupid thing I've ever heard. That would certainly be a solid way to get through a lot of games in a good period. It sparks some interest in the league, and it's at the perfect time of year where a lot of people watch it. So that's what I heard was kind of being discussed, but that still feels very close given where we are now and have no word of that as a starting date.
Yeah. Given that our players aren't here.
No.
You know, they aren't pre-season. They're still, Davila's still in Mexico. And
if you call
Stefan's
a six-week pre-season, right?
Yeah.
You don't have a lot of time before you'd need to be starting pre-season.
Well, so then you've still got a question. Is like, if we have to base in Australia, are you sending them all straight there? Do you go there early because they have to, you know, quarantine for a couple of weeks going out there?
Maybe, fair.
Depending on where they're coming from.
Yeah.
True.
And then you've got, but then you've still got the logistics of setting up your training camps and your bases and all that kind of stuff, as well as doing the office stuff and the content creation and the marketing. And, you know, there's a lot of water to go under the bridge in a very short period of time. I think initially I was hearing February was when they were thinking about starting the league. That might have been some time ago, but I think that feels much more realistic considering where all the speculation we hear is at.
Yeah, and if you're trying to build up some sort of community remotely, you need a little bit of time to get that going. Sure, you can go and host a one-off event at the Churchill when the season starts, but as we saw here the last time round, the drop-off on that was huge. They cancelled the second one of it. So, I only assume that was because of low ticket sales.
Yeah, and I don't think that's because they did anything wrong at all.
Exactly.
Like, I think
where interest lies.
Just the reality of that kind of event is, as a one-off, it always gets better interest than it will as this is every week.
Yeah, and to try and get that build-up of excitement around what that kind of event looks like, you know, organise those events and get people signed up to some sort of membership across 10 versions of those across the season or across 20 versions of those, or like some sort of season pass like that, that also takes time to put in place. And I just can't see us starting before the end of the year in any way. Like, 6-week preseason, if we're starting in December, that needs to happen tomorrow, like there or thereabouts. So, yeah, I think... Yep.
In Australia, so you'd already need to be there.
Yeah. Or you get to factor in everybody coming here and then everybody going into a training hub together for 2 weeks like they did last time round, which you have 2 weeks here and things like that.
If you don't have to quarantine on the way over. No.
Yeah, exactly.
If you don't have to quarantine on the way over to Australia, okay. That's cool. And that also gives you, if you can do it, a couple of weeks where you can get the players out to events to try and get them in people's faces. But that's still 6 weeks beyond, you know, a season starting, yeah. Right? There's still it's a small amount of marketing, which may help a small deal, but that far out from the season start, when they're not going to be here for such a long period of time, it probably has minimal impact.
Yeah.
So why would you bother?
Mm, yeah, it's tricky. Did you guys see reports today? I think it was from AAP. That there's a court date next week between FFA and Wellington Phoenix FC about some sort of owed payment or something. I wasn't really across all the details, and it was pretty the reason behind that court date is very
cloak and dagger.
Well, it's just not public information until it happens.
And neither side are saying what it's about.
Yeah.
There's a lot of speculation. But the only thing we do know is the court that's dealing with it only deals with cases that are $750,000 or above.
So it's big money. It's not a small claims court.
So people initially, and I think it included the Sydney Morning Herald, speculated that it was around the $1 million penalty that also been speculated about for not reaching the metrics required of us.
Yeah.
Now, that certainly is obviously above the dollar value and could be a thing that's happened. If the FFA sent us an invoice for $1 million, I'm sure Rob and Domi would have been pushing back quite strongly against that, and that might well have ended up with some court filing of some sort. But the media stuff today strongly hinted from both sides that no one expects the court date to actually happen, that it'll be settled out of court. And that probably means we'll never hear anything about what it was actually about.
Interesting.
The only other thing I would speculate that it could be is around us having some sort of additional costs out of that kind of pooled arrangement.
That's a good point.
For having gone over there twice and doing the stuff we did, because obviously we were in a slightly unique situation that maybe we've been asked to wear an additional cost there because of that, and we're pushing back on that, which would also seem fair enough. I can't think of anything else this would be about.
I mean, those are both assuming that it's the Phoenix taking a case against FFA. Could it be the other way around?
When I read the article, it certainly read that the Phoenix were the ones taking the case against the FFA.
Well, in the case of the kind of kitty fund, the scenario would actually be us taking a case against them for just not giving us enough of the money.
Yeah, that's
that
fair.
Makes sense, rather than us owing them money.
Yep, that makes sense.
They've just arbitrarily subtracted some extra money, and we've gone, hey, wait a second, everyone else got this and we got this.
And we got $750,000 less. Yeah.
But that's only speculation. But I genuinely can't think what else this would be about, unless it's something completely below the radar, like we haven't paid our licensing fee or, you know, something that to me would feel very unlikely.
Yeah.
But not completely impossible.
Yeah,
other owners in the league certainly have shirked on responsibilities before, but we've never had a hint of that from the current ownership group.
And that kind of thing hasn't been taken to court before. It's been threatened very publicly.
Yeah.
Especially against people like the Backreys or Charlesworth or those guys at Warren Central Coast, respectively. Tony Sage, even, I think. But it's never come to fruition. Those kind of public proceedings have, through the media, have done the job. But
And that's part of the reason I suspect this is the Phoenix taking some sort of action against the FFA, because if the FFA were the ones grumpy with a club, they absolutely in the past have been more than happy to leak that to the media in Sydney.
Yeah.
We would have 50 Don Bossy articles about how the Phoenix haven't paid their licensing fee by now.
The Kyle Patterson school of negotiating.
Yeah, and so that says to me that whatever it is something that Rob and Domi are biting their tongues about because they think it gives them a better negotiating position on. Because If they're losing out on this deal, I'm sure we'll hear about it very publicly afterwards. But
yeah, I suspect they're not allowed to talk about it publicly before a court proceeding as well. That's probably part of it, or for good reason not wanting to, potentially. So, yeah, there'll be a reason why they're not saying much. But unless there's, I mean, I think we've covered most things around the Phoenix at the moment. Is there anything else that you guys can think about that you want to have a chat about before we move on?
Well, I think there's the genuine possibility the league doesn't take place next year, which is not a Phoenix issue
and,
at all.
And we started with that, so let's go back full circle to where we started a discussion, and that if we can't get all this over the line, there might not be a season until this is all blown over, which...
And you'd have to say if the next season doesn't take place or is commercially hampered, if it and does take place, but, you know, it would cost a lot of money and, you know, all the clubs lose everything, that's probably the end of the A-League. I don't think that means it would be the end of an Australian National League, but I do think it would absolutely be the end of this iteration of what that A-League looks like.
I think you're likely to see... at the very least, a version of the A-League in the future, which has eight clubs, for example, where your clubs like Central Coast just can't, or even the Phoenix, just can't survive the current situation. And
I think the Phoenix will survive purely because they need to, and they will get support beyond what they've received from the government thus far to keep them alive.
Only if they're allowed to. I mean, if the A-League itself as an entity were to fold and a new A-League were to emerge, that doesn't mean the
different
Phoenix
scenario
would,
entirely.
But that doesn't mean the Phoenix be allowed to play. You know, the entry of a New Zealand team into that is not a given by
totally
any stretch.
I'm just looking at the current A-League. If that survives, the Phoenix will survive.
Yeah, but
purely because the government won't let them die.
But then Central Coast don't have that luxury. Brisbane Roar don't have that luxury at all. So does this MacArthur Rams certainly don't have that luxury.
No.
There's a distinct possibility. Western United, who have had big problems with money previously, apparently, don't have that luxury. So there's a big possibility that you're down to eight teams. That's eight clubs I've just listed off that don't have someone sinking money into them left, right, and centre.
Well, and how far does that realistically extend? Because I think the government will do a lot to keep the Phoenix afloat. But I think the reality is, you know, the Warriors are going to be in the same boat. The Phoenix are going to be in the same boat. The Netball Trans-Tasman League thing is going to be in a similar situation.
Well, that already doesn't exist. That
doesn't exist anymore. Yeah. But so the basketball, definitely. The Breakers, the Warriors, and the Phoenix, all in a similar position.
And so you're going to have the scenario where they're going to have to pick some winners. And I don't think they're going to be able to infinitely throw money at all of it just to keep it alive. And so that's where you're going to be having to go New Zealand football and FIFA to come and step in and save us. I think there in reality your backstop there, and I don't have the same confidence. I think the New Zealand government will absolutely try, but I think they're going to potentially hit a point where they're being asked too much by sport as a whole, and they're going to focus on first up rugby, because in reality that's going to be the thing. But rugby has a lot of its own money, but they're also going to focus on keeping community sport in New Zealand alive ahead of funding the Warriors and the Phoenix.
Yeah, and that goes for lots of other industries as well. They're going to focus on, in terms of the arts, focusing on keeping the stuff that's happening being produced inside New Zealand going, rather than focusing on bringing over massive bands from overseas.
Yeah, and it's the right thing to be doing. Like, that is the answer, is actually focusing on what we have here. Now, if that sees the New Zealand government funding the New Zealand National League ahead of the Phoenix, that would be really good, but it would still be a big step back for the development of players in New Zealand, right? Like, it'd still be good, and it would still mean we have a league, and it would still help with some of that development. It would mean we're not completely screwed, but it would be a big step backwards.
Yeah, there'd be a lot less of the Libby and Sarpreet scenarios going on if we didn't have a club like the Phoenix.
Yeah, but you'd get a whole bunch more Jake Butlers around the place.
Ignore the individual side of it. And instead of us dropping back 25 years, we only go back, you know, five or six, you know, and have to start again from there.
Yeah.
Which is still a big problem. And whether or not we could regain it is still in the hands of, you know, New Zealand football and the football community. And we might well, as a community, mess it up. But you'd at least be in a position to try. Whereas if you went back 25 years to basically having no National League, no Phoenix, none of that, it would be dire.
No, we wouldn't have seen the New Zealand Knights completely shut the bed for two seasons if we go back 25 years. So it's probably a good thing, generally. for the populace. Keep morale high. Speaking of New Zealand football, let's move on to talking about them and our National League. We still don't have a draw for the upcoming National League, which is supposed to kick off in just over a month.
Well, so, I again have off-the-record speculation from people in the know about that one too, which is quite fun because the I can't remember which club it was, but someone released a draw. One of the clubs put out a list of their home games and then quickly took it down. And that was because a draw got sent out. A draw has been done.
Yeah.
But then they quickly realized that it's impossible to get flights. Right, so you might be able to get people there in time for a game, but because of the reduced amount of domestic flights at the moment,
you can't get them in and
You can't get them in and out on the same day. You suddenly have to pay accommodation, and even if you do pay accommodation, actually they can't get home for two more days just because of the flights into some of the places we're asking people to play. And so, unsurprisingly, when that happened, everyone's had to go, "Ooh, maybe we need to rethink this draw," because even in the scenarios where you could get the flights with the reduced capacity, they're four or five times as expensive as they were previously. But you don't have suddenly more money.
Mm.
You certainly don't have money to pay accommodation overnight for the teams. You know, all of that stuff isn't there. But the way the country is at the moment, you can't just fly in and out on the same day willy-nilly and get most of a plane to yourself.
A lot of amateur footballers losing their weekends, I think. There'll be a lot of going out on Fridays, playing on Saturdays, going home on Sundays.
Yeah, so there needs to be, and I don't know at all where the discussion's at behind that of how they're going to fix it, but it seems like there has to be a lot of rethink of how on earth you're playing these. And some kind of hub scenario might make more sense, you know, like
4 weeks over Christmas, all the games.
Well, even if it's not that, but like get everyone to one place and actually you play a double header across the weekend. You play Friday, Monday.
Yeah,
you know, we ask that of Central League players over Easter. You know, can players at a higher level be doing something like that? Maybe, and instead of you know, you getting to fly everywhere, actually they're renting a bus and you're driving from Auckland to Napier. Yeah. And, you know, and then driving back, and you know that sucks for everyone. But
one of the things with losing Southern United and Tasman, having that joint Canterbury United moniker that takes the whole South Island, is that everybody is within the North Island apart from one team and can drive on a bus.
Correct.
And like at least they're in Christchurch too, right?
Yeah.
So Christchurch is serviced relatively heavily from all the main, well, at least from Auckland, Hamilton and Wellington.
Yeah.
So those teams can get to Christchurch pretty easily.
Totally.
Not so easy for Hawke's Bay, but
yeah, but Hawke's Bay can get to where they need to be, and I hadn't actually considered that side of it, so that makes sense why we haven't seen the draw yet. But at this point, if you can't do it, push things back a bit, maybe. Don't start the league in middle of November.
Well, and I think that must be part of the discussion, and maybe it might even be a deal breaker for the entire thing. Maybe it won't be possible to do. I think everyone was kind of like, oh yeah, we just do the draw, and then they were like, cool, that's all good, let's start booking stuff, and that was when team started realizing, wait a second, this is not going to work. We can't do that. And so, I don't think the draw that was sent was a provisional draw or any of that. I think it was largely final, which is why I can't remember who it was. One of the teams definitely posted, here's our home games, you know, get excited, rah, rah, and then it was like, oh, actually, walk that back a long way to the draw's not out now.
that's a big step back into the hedges. That makes sense. Other news, the New Zealand football had their awards night, which was not really an awards night, more a bunch of videos recorded at Eden Park and posted on the internet.
Kind of all they could really do.
Mm.
Well, under level 2 circumstances in Auckland, yeah. Absolutely.
The home of football.
Most things Eden were Park. Relatively, yeah.
Sorry,
bizarre.
Just there to have a dig. So
I don't understand why they didn't do it at North Harbour. Like, at least that is actually New Zealand football's home.
It made more sense to bring the whole thing down here and actually have a dinner. But
because then
anyway, to be fair, all the staff who would have needed to come weren't allowed to leave Auckland.
Yeah, so. Yeah, or even if they were, they had to bring level 2 with them. So tricky. But putting aside the actual event, the awards went. I don't really know much happened in New Zealand football, but went relatively uneventfully. The people that you thought would win, including Des Buckingham as coach of the year, which brings us to Darren Baisley being appointed to Des's replacement. And that is taking us 25 years back. Maybe not 25 years back, but certainly at least 6 or 7 years back. That is making that jump back to a weird situation, and you have to look at that and just say it's jobs for the boys.
It's a nasty one because, like, I don't think Baisley's a bad coach at all, and he might well be deserving of that role, but all of the optics of it are going to give that impression, right?
Yeah, like, last time around.
And that's really bad, the optics.
Last time around when Baisley was involved, coaches got kicked out and Danny Hay was brought in. This time around, Danny Hay's in charge. Similar coaches have been kicked out. Darren Baisley brought in. Like, how does that look to the outside? And you well within your rights to ask the question, I think. And
Cam's biting his tongue so much it's bleeding. But no, I agree with you. Like, I don't think it's necessarily, and I said this when Danny came in as well, I don't necessarily think it's anything against Danny as a coach, and I don't think it's anything against Darren as a coach. Darren is a good coach, and Danny might well prove to be. But the optics just aren't great, and it's really hard when you don't actually have good messaging explaining those decisions that aren't countering the jobs for the boys kind of optics.
I don't so much have a problem with Darren Baisley being appointed as I have Des Buchanan being removed from the role and somebody else put in. Yep. Anybody else,
but,
really.
But Des has now got himself a job at Melbourne City, which is fantastic. Yep, I hope, I think he deserves a role in the A-League and an assistant coaching role is he's more than qualified for, but I really like that he's got in there with, you know, City Football Group, because that could be for him a huge stepping stone to the kind of level of coaching he deserves to be at.
Yeah, totally fair enough.
Which is great. So hopefully that goes really well for him.
Yeah, I have to agree. I've been saying for quite a while he's my favourite coach in New Zealand football. We may be slightly biased on that view, but I'm glad he's got the role where he has, and he could certainly be a head coach in the A-League and move on in that group.
In this current situation when you can't have, it's very hard to have overseas coaches coaching the A-League. You see the ones that we had pretty much just get up and leave during all this. And so you're looking at the coaching pool in Australia and New Zealand, and he's certainly one of the best that New Zealand has to offer. And in the Australia-New Zealand area, certainly one of the best.
City's done well to grab him.
Oh, absolutely.
And the same thing's going to happen with the players, right? Yeah. When they finally work out what the marquees and all that's going to look at.
Yep.
Players are going to get snapped up. It's going to be, you know, changes in how New Zealand players are viewed within the league, possibly Ireland players as well. There's going to be massive changes in there purely because they just don't have the funds to do these things. Picking up someone like Des is massive.
Yeah.
Well, and given we've talked about a lot of negatives tonight, I'm going to talk about one, what I hope will be a massive positive of the changes to the league and the changes to the salary cap, is that it would be really smart to look at whatever sort of bubble Australia is operating in and make all players within that bubble local, right?
Yep.
So if we have a bubble with Australia, if it's just Trans-Tasman, cool. Consider the New Zealanders to be local for everyone. So everyone could be drawing on those players. Because within that bubble, you're not going to have people quarantining and all that kind of stuff. It makes a hell of a lot of sense to go, these people, let's consider them local. Let's have a bubble that's local. But that bubble might not just be us. It might be the islands as well.
Yep.
So imagine if some of those island players who have been imports are considered locals for not only us, but for all of the clubs. That would be a fantastic result for the development of football in this region.
Yeah, be a fantastic result for us if they did the New Zealand players alone. Correct. But I totally agree, Dave.
It would be fantastic to see that happen. I hope that someone somewhere is looking at that going, wait a second, we're going to be locked in this weird quarantining situation or off from the rest of the world. How can we make that work? Let's consider all those players.
Yeah.
At the moment, you know, we don't have that bubble. It doesn't include the islands, but I would really hope that's the direction that's heading and that we are thinking about that in terms of the kind of football as well.
Well, at the very least, even if there is no New Zealand-Australia bubble, but there are limited restrictions on getting from New Zealand into Australia.
Yep.
And even if it is just 2 weeks in quarantine, but you can get in, it's much easier to get players from here there than anywhere else in the... And even travel within the states, if it exists, is going to be under similar restrictions. Will essentially almost be treated as another state, potentially. Yep.
And another thing that feeds into this as well, in some sense, is that Australia, at a national team level, have been talking about how, you know, they're not going to be able to compete with Asia in the future. You know, the current global climate for travel and all of that is going to make it really hard for them to continue being part of Asia. So they haven't said it outright, but moving back to Oceania makes a lot of sense in that context.
And even if you're not doing it in complete moving confederations, but doing it in the fact that the All Whites play the Socceroos twice a year, for example.
Well, I think if they would look at moving confederations if they're going to look at that at all, but they may not be the only ones that do in this current climate.
Exactly. You might.
Indonesia's and those kind of countries who are sitting in the Pacific kind of region. Could do very easily.
We head towards a scenario that I know we've talked about before of merging Oceania and Asia and then splitting into Asia 1, Asia 2.
I don't think that works.
Along whatever line you decide to split, whether it be South Asia and Oceania become a thing. That might make sense where you are going Asia. If you merge it with Oceania, it's too big, so it needs to be two. Whatever you call them doesn't really matter. But that would bring us and the Pacific Islands back into whatever part Australia's with. Would make sense. But, you know, with that kind of happening on one side and with potential travel bubble stuff happening on the other side, I really hope that's something they're looking at.
I think you're more likely to have mainland Asia, island Asia.
Well,
that would make more sense. Yeah.
I just called them one and two, you know, like but rather, yeah, where so you draw the line that, doesn't matter.
In my head, when I do one and two, I do east and west with one and two. So yeah, Japan comes into playing Fiji, you know, and that just seems kind of
No. I don't mind where you draw the line, but I think you would if you would emerge them that it's too big, so you'd have to recognize you've put it somewhere.
But this is like a bigger conversation.
Oh, absolutely.
How the confederations work under the current situation where you got some confederations who are pushing on with playing games like UEFA because their geographic conjoinedness means that they can and kind of have to, whereas for us, all the island nations would be dumb to have that amount of travel going on just for football. So
Patreon content right here.
It's a bigger question. Yeah.
Well, it's the annoying thing as well about us finally getting, you know, the Belgium game and no.
Well, the England game won't go ahead either.
No, exactly. Not officially called yet, but it won't happen. And you know, the same double-edged sword of why we have the game in the first place is exactly the same reason it's getting canned, you know? Yeah.
It's kind of weird, eh? Because when it was announced, I was absolutely gutted that I'd never be able to go and see this, and now it's getting game. It's yeah, and then it's likely to get cancelled, and I'm gutted that it's cancelled because now we don't get to play them. So it's a shit situation.
Yeah, thing is though that we can say that England defaulted to us, so
which is a 3-0 win, right?
that's the rules. I don't make them. That's just how they are.
Better than the double figure loss we were looking at.
Yeah, with no players for sure. The problem is that England's entire squad is domestic based.
Yeah.
So we cannot say the same thing. But anyway, that's probably...
To be fair, you could probably get a squad of Englishmen based in New Zealand.
You could, well...
To give us a decent run.
Yeah, well, you could probably get a squad of New Zealanders living in England as well.
Indeed. I reckon the English domestic players would probably fleece us.
Yeah.
But I reckon you could get some Englishmen here that could face our best... locally based 11.
Let's be honest, Tom Biss is making that New Zealand team, and he's playing for like the 7th or the 8th tier or something. So
I reckon you do that. I reckon you host a domestic based.
Do you reckon Wilso gets a call up?
I think Wilso has long throws. He fills the void. The Boxall leaves. We're away. That's how it goes.
Sorry, he what? The void that Boxall leaves?
Fills a void.
Fills, just like by his presence?
No, as long as
he's the same size?
It's very harsh to Wilso.
Have you not seen Wilso's long throws? They hit the penalty spot.
That's fantastic. And you know what? That's a skill that Boxall doesn't have.
Boxall gets close, but...
he doesn't hit the penalty spot like Wilso.
It's a skill that I would love for the Whites to become known around the world for, which is our...
Wilso's long throw. I would love that,
long throws.
No, just our general potency from long throw. You don't want to give away a throw-in in the upper third, because that's going in the box.
Because Wilso's nailing the penalty spot.
Yeah, but what I am suggesting here, and we're going to end the podcast here, is a domestic-based Englishman versus... English-based New Zealanders, just host it, just play it, and then one here with your Englishmen here and your New Zealanders here, and then aggregate the scores.
We definitely still lose on aggregate
by quite a long way.
No, because Jake Jake is going to be playing in this game.
Dude.
No.
There are enough Englishmen playing New Zealand National League to make an 11 that would fight quite hard against a New Zealand-based number of players. Actually, and they've also got David Ball.
That's a good point, actually. The problem here that I haven't factored in is it's not the All Whites. It's the New Zealand-based All Whites, isn't it?
Yeah.
Whereas for them, it is the Three Lions because that is their team.
And even if it was the All Whites, I reckon there's a pretty handy squad of Englishmen based here.
Yep. All right, I like this idea.
I mean, David Ball leads that line.
Oh, yeah, good point.
Yeah.
You bring Ice off the bench if you want to give him a run. Like,
yeah.
The quality's still there. Greeny can have a run.
Of course, I forgot about those guys.
Bawley and Greeny up top. They're not scoring too many, but they'll create plenty of chances.
Well, depends who we've got as our back four for New Zealand.
Yeah, that's fair.
It might be quite young in attacking.
Stefan's
in
goal. Stefan's in goal.
Yeah.
He is currently in Germany. So
is he okay? Well, there's that idea.
Ollie Sale is in goal.
Oh, well, he can't.
It's probably quite a young back line. Yeah.
Very young
back line.
If someone wants to make this line up, make the best New Zealand-based team you can and make the best New Zealand-based Englishman team you can. Basically, Andrew Vorman, if you're sitting at work listening to this
and you're looking for something to do,
you've got a spare afternoon, I want to know who would win out of England versus New Zealand in New Zealand right now.
Oh, no. See, what I want is I want not only someone to make it, I want someone else to then run it 10 times in Football Manager.
Oh, my God. Yeah.
Yep, done. That's awesome. Yeah.
All right.
I know someone who does Football Manager. I'll get them to do it.
So, cool. Someone... I feel like the forum thread for the pod can now become entirely about debating who should make the 11 for each side.
Yep.
And then, we'll get someone to run some Football Manager on that.
Yeah,
more Patreon content.
I reckon we live stream this. We play it on Football Manager and we live stream it. We do a podcast commentary of we play the full 90 minutes on Football Manager.
I'm still waiting for gifts from season one of TW Go.
Okay, this is getting off topic now.
Shit.
To be fair, he did do two live streams.
Yeah, and then we got taken down by the man. So that was the only thing that stopped me. But you know what? Football Manager, people stream that all the time. There's a whole market for streaming games. So we're going to do this. We're going to make it happen. So yeah, forumites, listeners, hit me with your best players. We're going to make this Football Manager, and we're going to stream it. It's going to be a one night extravaganza. There we go. We've ended up the night on a much higher level than we started with. We ended up with the death of the A League, and now we have an entirely new form of entertainment for you all.
Thanks, Patrick. Well done.
An entirely new form of entertainment.
Yeah, nobody's put Football Manager on the internet before. Nobody's done it. Football like you've never seen before. 90
Fantasy
minutes.
Fantasy 11s, Football Manager, this is definitely new ground. We've invented a thing.
90 minutes, 90 emotions, everybody. And nobody's used that catchphrase before. That is brand new as well. Hey, thanks for listening. Sorry that was been so
you've
long.
You've got to have a team, Patrick. Yeah. Come on.
Jeez. Where Wellington goes to see Del Piero. Scraping the barrel now.
Oh, no.
That was a bad campaign from BBDO, wasn't it? Let's end there before we disparage any other organisations. Thank you for joining me, the two of you. Thank you for joining me on the couch, Mel. It's been nice having a live studio audience for our first episode back after the hiatus. And we'll be back. Jump on our Patreon. We'll probably push these episodes a little bit early on Patreon at the moment because there's not really anything else to talk about on a time-sensitive basis. So, to hear the latest from us, jump on our Patreon. I think it's about $5 a month, and you can get everything earlier than anybody else. But yeah, from the three of us, and Frosty who's away, and Ella who is gone, RIP, thank you for listening, and goodbye.
Bye.
Rampant Speculation brings you.
Patricio Barnes brings you. Obscure How I Met Your Mother references bring you. Death of the League brings you.
England versus New Zealand versus New Zealand versus England brings you.
Fancy new recording equipment brings you a highly... No, I fucked that up. Big
questionable
time.
Quality recording.
Well, I fucked that up.
Content not greater than equipment brings you.
Yeah, the content is the same. The potential for it quality. Sounding better, quality of recording, higher.
Brings you.
Yeah.
Horrendous All Whites Kits brings you.